Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And check it out. I am in my new studio. It is set up to the point where it is functional, but there's like no art or anything happening yet. Don't worry, that's coming. And I'll get the rest of the lighting set up at some point, too.
We can see in the art. It's like right there. Like right in the middle of it.
Aww. It's worth showing up just for that. Yeah. Oh, wait. You were pointing at Tom on your screen, weren't you?
No. No, I was pointing at you.
But had you pointed at Tom, that would have been absolutely valid as well.
True.
Thank you.
Also kind of for Ian.
I mean, that church with him inside, like
right, it's almost a tableau. All he needs mm-hmm. is like one or two other people in there with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's classic art.
Yes. Yep. Wow. So I'm in the process of setting up in my new place. Patrice, you're in the process of packing to move to your new place.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a whirlwind of change on two continents.
Yeah, and it's all happening right now. Like, it's all uh-huh. within, like, a couple of weeks. So who's next? Yep. Like, who's next who's going to move?
Right? I'm thinking Ben. Because Ben can move to a place where... I was going to say he can move to a place where it's less smoky, but it doesn't matter. The smoke moves.
No. You can even go to all the way to Portugal and you still get the smoke from there.
Right.
That's true. Ben, I hope you're doing okay. Right now, Ben is dealing with massive forest fire smoke. He's at 200 on the air quality index. That's really bad.
That's really bad.
Ben, I've been there and even worse. So I feel your pain. Stay inside. I hope you have an air purifier that you can use. The world's burning down. But on a happier note, we are all here. Except for Ben, who is doing his best to not die from smoke inhalation. I'm only partly joking. Patrice, besides the move, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Like moving is like stressful. Not sleeping a whole lot. Mm-hmm. I was in Portugal last week. First time in Portugal. Never been. That sounds crazy, but I somehow never made it there. It was beautiful. It was again not a lot of sleep. I think I slept like 4 hours each night or something. A mm-hmm. lot of long nights and then relatively early mornings. But it was, I mean, Lisbon is like a really beautiful city, a lot of good food. We had there was one restaurant we went to, which was like average, which, yeah, was okay. Mm-hmm. But we had the other days, we had really amazing food, really nice people. It was a good time. And then I flew home and had like the Pride Parade here in Linz and I don't know what I did. Oh, and Sunday, yeah, I went to Vienna because I was picking up my keys on Monday morning. Stayed mm-hmm. at a really nice hotel right at the Danube. It was also beautiful. Highly recommended. It's not super central, like, but with like there's a like a subway 5 minutes away, so not too far.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, that's it. It's been a week. Or two.
It has been a week or two. I am so with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good. I was away last week because I was meeting a spaceman. It was really good fun, actually. Well, I went to a lecture by Chris Hadfield. Mm-hmm. It was surprisingly good and very interesting. And one thing he did do was he got satellite pictures of the area he was in. Mm-hmm. He got information about the area he was in. And wove it into his presentation. So it wasn't just one cookie cutter thing that he was presenting all around the place. He actually got information about that particular area I was in, which was really interesting from the point of view of making it a much more engaging lesson, particularly for the locals. I mean, mm-hmm. to be fair, that part of the UK, I mean, some of them still think the Earth's flat.
So
their web feet, one eye in the middle of their forehead. I heard, and I'm not joking, I heard as we walked up, my wife was said, "Oh, come on, it's not like that anymore. Come on, it's not like that anymore." We walked up, there were a couple of security guards outside waiting and sorting out. And someone asked him, "Who's on tonight then?" And he says, "Oh, it's some bloke, he's an astronaut. I think he's been to the moon or something."
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
I just do not. And so, he's flat earth.
Can't he did the thing about Austria, the flat earth. So.
Yeah, sorry. He did the thing about the about flat earth. And he says, no. It is not flat, honest. And he put up a couple of really nice pictures. One actually with wind turbines and a particular view from, I think it was Holland maybe. And you can see them disappearing over the horizon, which clearly curvature of the earth. And that part of the UK, there's the Humber Bridge, which kind of gives away where it was. I mean, you can always tell Harley, but you can't tell him much, as they say. The Humber Bridge is this massive suspension bridge that goes across the river. And its tops are further apart than the bottom because of the curvature of the earth.
No, it's all Photoshop and you're part of the conspiracy.
Yeah, I'm part of the conspiracy, obviously.
Yeah, Ian, part of Big Round Earth.
I am. It's either that or it's clearly all of the work for the from a work perspective these last weeks. I've been learning about the wonders and joys of DB2.
Not good.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where I learned about it a lot from a previous customer we had that I had to, and I thought I'd left that one behind. Oh, we've got a new agent in. DB2's coming out. Can you do some stuff? It's public news, and sort of thing. Do you want to? Can you create some material for it? You know about DB2, don't you? Yeah, go on. No, I've been rereading notes and having to look at and beta testing and stuff. It's good fun, mind you, ancient monolithic databases. For those interested, DB2 was the second relational database after Horrible.
Yeah, that's true. There's a city in Germany where there's a conspiracy theory that it doesn't exist. So if you've been to Bielefeld, then you're part of the conspiracy. And I met someone on Saturday. She was from Bielefeld. I'm like, oh, you're part of the conspiracy then. Because I've been to it. So.
That's crazy.
So, Patrice, you're
those crazy Germans, great. As they say.
Well, okay. So, from my perspective, Patrice, Ian, you are over the horizon from me. And then if I turn around and face the other direction, Tom, you're over the horizon in the other direction.
Sure.
Right.
Curvature of the earth is an amazing thing. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You and Patrice are moving. I did kind of a virtual move. We had the house fumigated for termites. And we didn't really think it through. But, you know, you don't really want to poison everything that you eat or utensils or mattresses where you sleep. So essentially, we moved 60% of the house out to the backyard into tents. Instead of, we have three tents for camping that became our storage area. Moved all that junk out. Waited 2 or 3 days. We're at Airbnb in San Jose for a few days. Came back in, cleaned every centimeter of this house. So it was a great excuse for cleaning. I mean, I saw spots in my house I haven't seen since we moved in. Then had to move all the crap and the tents back in. So I feel a little bit of your pain of moving. It's maybe 30% of your pain.
No, that is a full-on move. I mean, you moved everything out and everything in. So like,
the only thing we didn't have to is the big heavy furniture. You know, we just cleaned it. But, you know, mattresses, we had, you know, three mattresses, big. That's when you start regretting getting big foam mattresses that you can't hold on to. They're impossible to move. It's like Laurel and Hardy trying to get the mattresses out the door and into the tent. That was quite an adventure.
You see, I hired someone to do that.
I hired someone we should have. Big moving too.
We should have.
Hiring people is the way. It's the only way. I've told the story before about moving sofas and it looked like it was It took me hours to move something in, and two guys came in, picked it up, walked down with it. Yeah, never again. Never again. I will pay people. I will pay people. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
I am with you on that. All right. Well, it's a big
Tom,
show.
Before we start, Tom, did you get any of that meth money from the people who Jimmy gated your house?
No, but I was thinking about that when I was talking to him, because his crew was a bunch of young guys and they were really hyperactive. And I was thinking, wow, I wonder if they're on meth. But what I learned was these poor guys, they worked their butts off. Mm. They set up every day. They have four houses to work on. Four. And when you fumigate, you got to put this big tent all around the house and get it set up and put fans in and, you know, get it set up to put the poison in the house. They do four of those a day. And they came out and it was the most efficient, well-organized thing, you know, because they do four of them a day. They come, they drive up, the guys immediately jump out of the trucks. They get the big tarps out. They're throwing them up on the roof. Next thing I know, my house is completely under a tent. Anyway, I did think about the meth angle because they were moving so fast.
Wow. The whole thing of having to do fumigation to me, just it's so weird because that's not a thing here in Colorado.
Yeah, we just don't get cold enough to kill off the bugs in the wintertime. So, you know, I'm kind of a live and let live guy, except when the termites or some animal gets into your house and starts eating the wood, then I have a problem with it. Otherwise, I try to leave
like
them
in
alone.
Like in those cartoons where they like come in and like the house is basically gone in like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
They don't move quite that fast, but they move pretty fast.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I think it's news time, and Ian already dropped a story in. So
I did.
Fill us in on the story, Ian.
This is another good news AI story. I'm not entirely sure with, and Patrice can probably help me on this, whether it really is an AI thing or built more computers do it, helping to do big maths, basically, as we've talked about before, is they're using AI in the NHS in the UK to help scan results of cancer diagnoses. Basically, it's quicker than a human sitting there looking through them. That's more accurate. So I'm presuming this is just big. It is just big maths, basically.
Well, I mean, all AI is.
Oh yeah, it's big maths, isn't it?
I mean, it's computers, and computers are like basically just calculators. So yeah,
it's just big math. Yeah, yeah. And so it's hugely successful with sort of three or four of the most common cancers in the UK, 90% accurate, which is fantastic. So again, another good use for this kind of idea. This technology where we're taking compute power, we're taking thinking and stuff, and we're applying it to a good solution rather than trying to take over the world and turn into robots. I was really impressed, but this was another one where once our sort of health service appears to be doing things that are sensible and good use of, again, AI technology. It's not all monsters taking over the world. There's some really great stuff. Prostate cancer. So it's things like prostate cancer. It's also head and neck cancers. Particularly helpful because they can narrow down the size of the actual tumor. And that means when they want to come and treat, particularly things like prostate cancer, the side effects are they can do a lot of damage to surrounding tissues when they're trying to get rid of the thing. So you can end up with incontinence and things. And with this diagnosis, they've got much better accurate early answer to yes, it's there, yes, it's bad, that they can go and scoop it out and deal with it without affecting the rest of them. So that's got to be a better thing.
Yeah, I'm surprised this is already being like really applied in reality, or like in not inside like research environments, but like real like
treatments. Yeah, it's a Microsoft project called NRI,
which is I mean, this was like I want to say 5 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, I saw a bunch of studies. Like with my boss, we were working on, or we were just researching, like what AI can do in the medical field, and looking at research papers. And like for brain cancers, for example, I think at least the one study I remember was like it was 95% accurate at finding cancers. And most humans, like even professionals treated, like trained and like years of experience, could do barely over 50.
Wow, that's a big improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually everybody catches it. Like if it's big enough, like they will catch it. But with especially with brain cancers and you said prostate cancer, like I mean, most cancers in general, the earlier, the better.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers here are incredible here. For each patient, Dr. Tippy spent between 25 minutes and two hours working through 100 cross-section scans, making comparisons and looking to see if they can find anything. The AI is about 2.5 times quicker in making those comparisons.
It's the general thing. Anything that is kind of pattern recognition, pattern matching of some sort, that's where AIs are really, and computers in general are very, very good at.
Exactly.
I mean, we can train ourselves to be good. I mean, we're actually not bad at pattern recognition because that's what we do all day. It's different. Like the images are not always very clear, and then you need like a lot of them. And there's also a lot, I mean, in the brain especially, there's a lot of very dense tissue. So it's easy to miss something, especially when it's really, really tiny.
Yeah.
So
this is...
It's really cool.
These are probably MRI images, right? Because they're looking at soft tissue. Mm-hmm. And they have to build up a 3D view. So I assume they stick the AI on the resulting 3D model.
Yeah.
Because they have to analyze the contours and things, right?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Mm-hmm. That's being done today. Like, especially for brain scans, they do a lot of like cross sections and then they combine that into a 3D.
So the company where I used to work, one of the pieces of software we had would take those 2D images and would construct a 3D model. It would create a mesh on top of that. It's a little bit nerdy, but a modeling mesh and figure out the best points for the mesh and so on, and then feed it to this kind of software.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also really interesting because in semiconductor, AI we called it machine learning, not AI, but it was machine learning for almost the same purpose, which was to find defects on semiconductors. You take a bunch of 2D images from scanning electron microscopes, build up models for those, and send them to a machine learning algorithm that was trained on previous data. And it had similar benefits because it used to be there were people standing at scanning electron microscope machines, looking at JPEGs of images to find it. It was crazy.
I mean, that is mostly how it's still done, I think. And also even in the medical field, like, I mean, any kind of tissue sample that's analyzed, half of like when it's still all manual, like someone uses a microscope and looks at it and all of that.
For things like radiology, you know, x-rays?
Mm-hmm.
Is there software to help the manual operators?
I mean, there's a lot of software already. Like a lot of it is even decades old already. Like it's sad, but AI is like in these cases where it's about, as I said, where it's about recognizing certain patterns and then like showing that or highlighting that to someone to make a decision on. It's really like AI is really, really good at it. And getting only better because the resolutions are getting better, the training is like the models are getting better, all of that. You can do it faster.
Here's a question for you. Would you call it AI or machine learning? Or is it whatever?
It's part of AI too, but yeah, it's really mostly machine learning.
I'm just interested that AI has replaced machine learning as the term du jour, you know?
Well, yeah, it's the buzzword. It's the buzzword of the moment, isn't it? AI is the buzzword of the moment.
Which is really just like the same thing that happened with ML, where people said AI and meant ML. Now they say AI and mean LLM.
I mean ML, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's machine learning one way or another.
Yes. There's a big difference between LLMs and other types of AI, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. This is really cool that they're using it. Thank you. I'm going to forward that to some people.
Yeah, it's a really cool one. They said they were working with Microsoft and the research in the hospital. Yeah. So what does working with Microsoft mean?
Well, they
working with Microsoft.
And Microsoft
are they running?
In...
are they running the stuff?
I think
Azure,
they're running the stuff in the Azure. I reckon they're running some of that in the Azure cloud.
Yeah, because Microsoft is in a pretty deep partnership with NVIDIA and is running their Azure stuff
in the Azure cloud.
Yeah, I guess my question was, does Microsoft have any particular, training software, inference software, or is it probably more the back end part of this?
It's the back end Microsoft, and they'll probably have coders do. I don't know. I'm guessing at this.
They do have teams for stuff like that. I mean, it's not as if they can't. They're training models themselves. So this is totally.
Yeah, don't forget about Watson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That too. Yeah, but
healthcare market.
That was IBM.
That's IBM.
Oh right, that's IBM. Never mind.
But I guess they're hooked up with OpenAI, right? So they have access to all that as well.
Exactly. No, but is that Microsoft themselves? I mean, they have departments for that, and they train their own models. So, a typical partnership, they will probably have some people from the NHS.
I know they were working with the NHS, definitely some clinical staff. They were working with the NHS on many different things. And my experience of working with hospitals, there was always some fairly close involvement with Microsoft where they could. So it makes sense. And I mean, I saw the cost for this. I mean, the Adam Brooks Hospital, I mean, it was only $500,000, which is cheap in this kind of context of things.
100%. The machines cost so much more.
Yeah, that project was only $500,000.
$500,000 plus some time from Microsoft and their... and whatever else. I mean, that's chicken feed, isn't it, in today's world? It really is. It all looks promising.
And this is early. I mean, this is really early. Like, give it a couple of years still, and then we're talking a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's interesting stuff. I like this. This is good positive spin about AI rather than it all being Terminators coming to take over the world and bloody Skynet. It's not all of that.
How do you know that the Terminator's not involved with this project as a
horse?
I always check. I don't know. I do check when I go meet people now for the zip at the back. You know, that's important. But apart from that, I do the best I can. You know, it's
and the thing here is, this is not replacing professionals. This is giving them tools so that they can do a better job.
Which is a great application.
Yeah. It's an important distinction. It's bringing down the time it takes them to work it. Because I think I would know, I would be surprised if it was solely that diagnosis from the machine that's used to then report to the patient. There'll be a review by an expert as well that sits alongside it for radiologists that will go through that same data, will go through the findings of that data to make sure they marry up with the thing. And I mean, I think it's said here there. Clinicians approving its work without corrections 2/3 of the time.
Yeah.
So there is still a check and balance to it. It's not going to be just computer that says you've got cancer, mate. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be that at all. It is going to be a real person has checked the data to make sure it's valid and correct.
And I mean, if they say it's 90% correct, then probably means that another 30% was just, there was, I don't know, the frame was not 100% correct. Yeah. It was a small correction they had to do and stuff. But it still detected it properly.
But that, in terms of a time saver of, you've got that amount that that day it's correct. I don't have to look at that one any more than that. That's time saved already.
It's like finding a needle, trying to find a needle in a haystack, and the AI removes 90% of the hay for you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Exactly. It makes your job easier.
I have an ultrasound done last week, just a general checkup, everything, all my organs, and I looked at the screen and I'm like, how can you even fix anything?
A bunch of blobs of stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's like
what? Which I've looked at that. What do you mean? Is that my inside?
This blob is weird. But that blob is that... really nice.
Is that blob my liver? Or...
I don't know. Like, I couldn't, but they could recognize it. So as I said, like, you can train people to like read that stuff, but machines are just better at it. And like the important part here is the speed, and it's the early detection.
Yeah. Like, better the earlier, the better. Better quality of life for the patients. Yeah,
exactly. So like, if you can recognize a cancer like in a very early stage, and you can monitor it, like, you don't even have to do anything immediately. You can just say, okay, could turn out bad, could be fine, and it just disappears. Let's watch it for another whatever, like a month. I mean, it's what they do even like today when they detect it somehow. Usually, if it's not like advanced stages, they might leave it for or monitor it for a little while. Mm-hmm. If it's really growing,
then they jump on it.
And then they jump on it, and that's all they need. Just okay, hey, yeah, there is something to look at, and then let's see if that turns out to be a bad thing.
Exactly.
All right. So, potential bad thing, maybe good thing. Mm-hmm. Patrice's story.
With any EU thing, I'm usually on the fence on it. Yeah. So the EU has voted, or someone in the EU, the parliament, I think, has voted on some regulation about user-replaceable smartphone batteries. And even though the article says smartphone batteries, it's actually much wider than that. Basically, any battery in any device. And they're kind of, it's all kind of vague, and like, what is replaceable and what's not. And like, it's not the, what, the, like, I mean, the feature phone era where the, like, you drop your phone and the battery flies out. That's not it. Even though some people, I think, want that time back, but they want basically their feature phones back.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more.
3310 again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little bit more advanced in a sense. I mean, the EU is basically saying users should be with reasonable means able to replace a battery. So that means it's no like special gear you have to buy, or like, I think they're even saying it, like, commercially available it has to be. Like, it's not something that only Apple has, or Apple and a couple of repair shops, for example, or like Samsung or Google or whoever. It's not something like you should be able to buy it, and it should be reasonably easy to, for you to replace.
Yeah.
So no glue, for example.
Yeah,
because glue is really hard to replace.
I mean, I'm reading here. I mean, they're saying that they ought to be some common screw. Also, sort of, there should be screws on the thing that you can actually open with a normal regular toolkit.
They're not even saying that. They're not even talking about like a screw kit you might have at home. As long as you can buy it commercially from any or couple vendors, that's fine.
So if a repair company can buy the tools to get in there, then fair enough.
Apple tools, right?
Yeah, or you should be able to. I mean, if you can go to Amazon and buy the toolkit and then do it, fine. Like, there is some exceptions that being, let's say, discussed currently, because if your device is, I think, like waterproof and dustproof and all of that, then you're exempt.
Which is most phones.
Which is most phones these days.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's.
I'm honestly thinking,
what problem is this solving?
Right. As long as you can get your phone repaired by the company, or when you get rid of your phone, they recycle all that stuff. I mean, I would prefer having the right or having the ability to replace the battery in my Braun razor, electric razor. I can't even repair that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would feel more comfortable tearing my $100 Braun shaver apart to see if I could replace the battery. There's no way I'm tearing apart a $1,000 iPhone.
But this regulation would actually cover that. So any battery-operated device should, in theory, do that. But as I said, I don't see the problem, because, I mean, it is doable today. Probably not for most people, but for like people like me and maybe you, like, it's doable. And then there is a million shops who do it. Like, it's not that you have to go to Apple I think or that, Google.
I think that's the thing. As long as you can do it with an expert, that opens it up in terms of economics and availability to a lot more people.
Yeah, and then as I said, I don't understand what problem this is solving. This is a typical EU thing where I'm like, we have more important issues, but no, we should regulate batteries and chargers and so on.
Right.
I think most people like the idea of being able to replace their phone battery or other electronics batteries, even though they would never actually do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, even back in the feature phone days when battery life was usually awful and it fell out half of the time. I mean, I know very few people who actually ever did it.
All right. Never did. I think the whole, as you say, the whole right to repair is a noble effort, you know, the whole mission about right to repair, but maybe the focus should be on something else. You know, I think the first time the right to repair
climate change.
Yes. But I mean, even within right to repair, I think like the issue with the Caterpillar that had the, you know, the thing that you basically couldn't do anything to fix your tractor. I think that's a more practical application of the right to repair idea than smartphones and has bigger benefit.
Yeah.
The John Deere thing.
Or John Deere. That was John
that's
Deere.
That's kind of where this started.
Yeah, it was John Deere.
Because farmers wanted to be able to like fix their tractors in the field, and they
wouldn't let them. It was more than you couldn't do it; it was illegal to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the craziest part.
That is definitely crazy. And within the right to repair, there is things where I think it's reasonable. I mean, you should be allowed to repair your phone at your own risk, for sure. But you should be allowed to repair it. And it should be possible for third parties or for your like for you to get the tools and the means to do it. I think that's totally reasonable to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And we, I think, mostly got that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, iFixit is actually at the forefront of that. I think was it Samsung and for Google, I think, the Pixel line. iFixit is the official partner for those companies for any kind of part.
And that's a perfect way to do it, you know, partner up with somebody like iFixit, and then all the repair shops can use that kit, right?
There's one positive thing in this whole regulation. Manufacturers will be required to provide parts for 7 years. And I think that's a good thing. I mean,
that's
there
a good
is companies already really good doing that. But there's also companies that are like, well, you bought it today. It's out of warranty tomorrow. So, we don't care.
Now, the irony there is you'd be able to get parts to fix a phone that isn't otherwise supported, meaning there's no software updates for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you have all day battery life.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
there's by the way, another exception that they're discussing. If the battery, I don't know, it was 500 cycles and has to retain more than 80% capacity or something like
that. They were going to legislate that?
Yeah. There's a whole discussion about that.
I saw that in here.
Yeah. Which would, for most devices, probably mean it lasts 5 years or whatever. And then they're like, okay, no, then it's fine. So it's the typical political thing. It makes no sense whatsoever. I understand the thought behind it. As I said, people wanting to go back to feature phones where they can replace their batteries. That's probably, if you look at who is in the European Union, at that level, they're a certain age.
Yeah.
So,
that's
probably what they're
Are you calling me old?
Well, I mean, I've had a phone like that. So,
I mean, the only benefit of the replaceable phones on my old Nokias and Ericssons was because the battery life wasn't that good. So you'd buy a second battery.
Yeah.
And when the first one died, you could swap it out and put the new one in. But we have solutions for that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you just buy an external battery and plug it in.
Right.
Or MagSave it or whatever, Qi charge it, and works too.
Right.
It's mostly a non. As I said, they're hiding behind the it's better for the environment and better for consumers, blah 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 thing. But really, as I said, I don't see the big problem with this.
It's not something that I hear people complaining about.
No, as I said, generally repairing, being allowed to repair things, not using completely proprietary screws that nobody can reverse engineer, which I mean, anyway, happens because someone just looks at the screws as, okay, this has to look like this, done.
Take a mold, you're done.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's, I remember when Apple introduced the, what was it, pantaloupe screws?
Yes.
Or triangles and all of those weird things. It took no time for someone to sell them.
But didn't they also have a patent or a trade secret? And that could be a trade secret, but a patent on that, that it wasn't just a fact. Yeah, certainly you could reproduce it.
Sure, but but
it's
nobody
illegal
cared
to reproduce it.
But nobody cared. In reality, and I think Apple gave up on it because just in reality it didn't matter. Like Chinese companies just started like selling it everywhere. Like there was no way to stop it. And I think the political side of, hey, this is probably not a good idea, also started to happen. Yeah.
The fact that people were talking about it was bad PR for Apple. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally said I'm totally for that. And I think all the things we've done in this right to repair area with, as I said, you can get parts, you can get instruction manuals, you can like even get the tools from some companies, like iFix it and Apple and so on. I think all of that is positive, and all of that is because of political pressure. So I'm fully with that. I just think this here doesn't do anything. I mean, the same thing for the cables. I'm like, really? Like the cable, the charging cable we're using, really the biggest problem we have?
Yeah.
How about we standardize how big a cucumber can be?
How about if we're going to have power outlets and plugs that are all the same throughout the world?
Oh,
that would
actually save some money. But EU has already to some extent done that. Within the EU, you can go anywhere and most plugs will work.
Yeah.
Switzerland is an exception. They're not in the EU, so.
UK is the one we have our own sensible plugs.
UK was an exception, that's true. But within like mainland EU, at least, there's a standard.
Yeah, I experienced the challenge in defining a new plug standard when I went to South Africa, because they defined a new standard like 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes so long for the migration because you don't throw stuff out every five years. They effectively have two different kinds of plugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened in Europe also for a little while, but by now, I mean, as I said, like we can just plug in. Like there's a two-prong euro, and then there's the three-prong euro, and it works. Like I go to Italy, I go to Portugal, I go to Spain, to Poland, whatever, it works.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so the EU has done that already. So they're running out of things to standardize, I guess.
Just you wait, Patrice. Pretty soon, it'll be dress lengths and shirt collars.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, shirt collars. Yeah, okay. I'd be in violation.
Yeah. Not,
right.
Shut it out. Not Euro style.
Good thing you're in the US.
But I went to Catholic school, so I understand dress codes.
Yep. So, Tom, tell us about your story.
Speaking of dress codes, let's talk about memory.
Right. I remember dress codes.
Okay. Good one, Jeff. I had two stories, and one was an AI one, but it wasn't as good as Ian, so I'm going to skip that. One AI a week is probably enough. Is that right? And Ian had a good one. So I'm going to go back to, I think I missed a couple of weeks, but I think the last thing I talked about was memory chips. And this story is about more about the interface speeds of memory chips. So Micron has announced support for something called DDR7. I think DDR7 is the important part. Basically, it's a faster interface for memory chips. Mm-hmm. Samsung, I think, announced support for this late last year. Now Micron's jumping on board, so it seems to be gathering some momentum. And I know a little bit about these DDR interfaces and the speeds that they're running and how hard it is to design those interfaces and get them on chips and make them work. It's really hard. But the fact that they're announcing it is a good sign. So what that means as a user is you'll ultimately get faster systems based on this faster memory interface. The downside is the control, you know, totally changes the controller. So the controllers on the chips have to be updated as well. And I'm guessing that the speeds that these things are running at, it's going to be tricky to get them to production volume. But it's on the order of, I think they quote, about 36 gigatransfers, transfers, basically 36 billion memory transfers per second, which is,
think,
more than double DDR6, just for reference. So in one generation, we get a little bit more than 2x. And of course, guess how they position this memory interface? It's part of, you know, it's going to be used for AI, of course. And the thing where it touches AI is it helps with the memory transfers for, you know, GPUs are very, can have memory transfer, very heavy memory transfer loads. So you team this up with, you know, NVIDIA chips or incorporate them into NVIDIA chips or the memory, however they architecturally design that, will probably give a pretty big boost to AI applications. So it's actually kind of fair to tag along with that.
Mm-hmm.
So anything
memory intensive where you need fast memory, especially. So I would say any like graphics intensive thing than AI because it's using graphics cards a lot.
Right. I always think of
like VR games, AI.
Right. So I think it's, you know, it's a lot of PR and all that kind of BS stuff, but I think it's actually a trend that will be customer, you know, normal human being will actually notice the benefits of this stuff. And I'm not so
sure about that.
Okay. No, maybe definition of normal human being is not
clear. Yeah, I think most people will not notice really and will not care because for them, what is currently on the market is too fast already. But for sure, if you're in some field or if you're like us, we will for sure notice.
Well, the one thing I'm wondering is, as you say, with most of our devices today, computers, you know, laptops, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android phone, they're way faster than most people need.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that kind of goes with cycles with the software application. And I'm wondering if we're going to hit something, not right away, but if people are doing a lot of training, certainly, or inferencing on more of the edge devices or some part of that, I wonder if we're going to get to the point that, will we get to the point again where to really take full advantage of the cool new software, you need to upgrade your phone or your PC? That's not the case today very much, unless you're, you know, kind of on the extreme edge of computing.
Probably not your phone or PC, but in the AR, VR world, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, because there's
so much more computing to be done. And there, I think it will know. I mean, you see it with like the current headsets, like how powerful the CPUs and GPUs have to be to even do, let's say, relatively speaking, still simple thing. But you can still, where you still have whatever, a 2K screen per eye and still needs a lot of power.
That's a really good point,
The AI world and the graphics chips and the processing gear that goes in the back of all of that stuff, this sort of memory will only be a boom to make it go faster. When does the diminishing returns come in, I guess?
Yes and no, because, I mean, there's already in your phone and your computer a lot of AI stuff in there. It is on the training side for sure. Like when you're training the models, it makes a huge difference. Or when you're doing like something at a really large scale, like Google or Microsoft or something like that, that for sure makes a massive difference.
But you're not doing that on your phone.
No, but on your phone, you usually get a pre-trained model. So that's the point. That's the difference.
Yeah, it's just inferencing at that point, right?
Yeah, or improving the model, like adapting it.
Model refinement. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like that was a good call on the AR headset. You know, having looked at the Vision Pro presentation, you could definitely see that if you got 2x faster memory, I'm sure Apple would figure out a way to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it will probably mean that you can do some like real-time processing twice as fast, or at least close to twice as fast.
Right.
Or do it more accurately because you have a little bit more time to do something because it's faster. So
maybe in terms of something like the Vision Pro becoming more practical, you know,
Yeah,
not $3,000 and MetaQuest too. Yeah, I just
I don't think it's a price question. It's more a what can you do, and I think that's where we're pushing. That's where we're pushing the limits of the hardware.
Price within reason. I mean, even if it worked really well, $3,000 is still a challenge. If it worked really well and it was $1,500 or $2,000, I might think about it. You know?
Well, for consumers, but for businesses, $3,000, $3,500, $4,000. That's nothing.
Right. I paid as much for my Mac. So,
but I'm thinking of I have this image that I can get rid of all my monitors and have a Vision Pro like device that works really well, and I just use it when I use my computer.
Yeah, and you will get there. I mean, we're just starting. My point was more, it's not about the price. It is that's the area where we're currently pushing the limits of hardware.
Yeah. So of course it's going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean the other thing is if it's twice as fast, you can probably do it a little bit more energy efficient, because you can, like, if you do the same amount of computing and you can finish it in half the time basically, then you can sleep after that and save some battery, hopefully. So
sleep sounds nice.
Sleep sounds awesome.
yeah you know what else sounds awesome? TSO hosts. It's true. TSO hosts is awesome because they are taking what they do so well, which is make sure that you have bandwidth for streaming, providing solid web hosting and file storage, and they are giving that to us so that we can live stream shows to you every single week, so that we have a place for the website to live, so that we have a place for all the show file recordings to live, so that you can watch or listen to episodes at your leisure. This is what they do really well. And without their generous support, we would not be here, because the resources that it would take for us to put this together, it's just not feasible. Their generosity means that we can live stream cool episodes every single week, just like this. And if you're watching or listening later on at your leisure, great. You can find those episodes and get at them without any problem at all. So what we can do to let TSO hosts know that we appreciate that they are here supporting the British Tech Network is go out on social media and thank them for being here and supporting us. That's all you have to do. Super easy. That said, there's a good chance at some point you're going to come up with an awesome idea for a domain name and website, and you'll need to buy that domain name and you'll need a place to host your website. So why not take a look at TSO Host, because they'll make it easy for you to make that happen. Go and get your domain name, add it to your cart, get your hosting package in your cart, and then add the discount code BTN20, and you'll get 20% off your order. So not only are they being incredibly generous by supporting us, the British Tech Network, they're also offering you a sweet deal because you're a BTN fan. You're part of the family. So thank you, TSO Host, for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. And Patrice, I'm always glad when you're here, but there's a little extra level of gladness that happens because I can lean on you to tell people about the live chat and where to find the archives. And it's so much smoother when you do it. Would you please do that?
I listened to last week's show, so I was like, you got it almost right, but only almost.
I'll take that as a win.
Yeah. So, unless you are currently on a starship and you're using the reverse polarity ion mop to clean the starship, that's a little thing about our pre-show when we talked about that. if you want to listen to the pre-show and the post-show, like learn a little bit about how the sausage is made, and have a little bit of fun with us where we talk about other stuff that we're not talking and we're recording, you can join us every week on Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, and Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show, if you're into the Apple side of things. And then you can join our live chat, chat.britishtechnetwork.com. And when you hit like head over there, you are in. It's that easy. But let's say you are like listening to us in the recorded form in your favorite podcast player of choice, or I don't know, the computer is playing it for you while you're mopping the Starship. Totally fine. That's what recordings are for. That's why we do this. That's why we post it every week. By the way, thank you, Tom and Ben, for posting it every week and being so fast at it.
Yes, and you're awesome.
You're really awesome. And yeah, when you're listening to this in the recorded form and you want to still see like the stories that we talked about, the cool things, the links to that we're about to post in the chat, if you want to see all the other funny things that we like wrote in there and that other people sometimes write in there, yeah, then you can't do that, or at least you can't join us live anymore. It's not possible, not feasible, unless you can do time travel. But you can, and I mean, time travel would be really hard because you have to obey the temporal prime directive. So be careful with that.
Right. There's also the temporal accord.
Yeah, it's like all of that. So yeah, it's probably not worth it. But you can at least still see the transcript from the chat. You can see all the links and everything. And in order to get to that, you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then there is a little calendar that pops up. We have to put in today's date, today as we're recording it, which is the 29th of June, 2023, June 29th, 2023. And if you put those coordinates in there, those like space-time coordinates, then you will get to the chat transcript. It's that easy.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice. You make it seem so easy.
I also try to make it interesting. Like,
you do, and I just try to get through it,
excuse me. Which is also very interesting and funny when you listen to it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, at least my dysfunction does bring entertainment. So exactly. There's that. Awesome. Well, thank you for doing that, Patrice. And now it's time for some cool things. Who was the first cool thing? And that would be Tom. I'm surprised it took that long to drop a link in. I mean, it's not like we didn't have the whole show to be ready for
get
that.
Ready for that.
That control C, control V probe. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, right. That's really complicated. So yeah, totally get it. All right. Tell us about your cool thing, Tom.
My cool thing this week is I know this is a tech show and this is probably not the right direction to go with sports, you know, sports ball and all that. But it is sports related. It's go team. My cool thing is called the Immaculate Grid. And the Immaculate Grid is a website. I don't think they have an app or anything. It's just a website, which is a Wordle-like baseball game. So it's like Wordle, but it's for baseball fans. Okay. Now I've lost virtually all of the audience.
but for that self-selecting,
that 1%,
you have their undivided attention.
So the reason I did it is our picked it as my cool thing is a couple things. It has a really simple, really good user interface. The way you search for the answers, it has to be basically you're trying to find baseball players that meet criteria that they set. And they tie into a database that has every baseball player that's ever played. And it's super simple and works really well. And it even got my nephew. He was the one that turned me on to this. My nephew is about 35, got really excited about this. And he does not get excited about these kind of gamey things. And one thing I promise I will never do is post my Immaculate Grid results on Mastodon. I'm not a big fan of sorting through Wordle results on the old days on Twitter and now on Mastodon. So I vow to never do that.
Just fair to them out.
If I just need to create a filter to filter out the word Wordle. But if you're into baseball, I know there's a few people on in the BTN and world that are baseball fans. I think maybe three.
My guess is Ben has already loaded this page and is filling in his grid. Even
I think you say there's about three people in the world who are interested in baseball.
Three people on BTN.
Sounds about right.
I know Bald's got it. And, you know, his son plays baseball and they're baseball fans. So maybe yeah. Ben and one other person.
All right. That's really cool. There'd be no way I could play it because I would have no idea what to put in any fields.
You should. Yeah. If you went on it, I'm guessing you wouldn't get any questions, but just try it once and so, see if you can.
So I'm already lost. I clicked on one of the squares and it says search. And I'm like,
you're trying to search for names. So just type in Frank.
Okay. I'll type in Frank.
Jeff.
And it's doing a search. Okay. And it brings up all these people named Frank.
Pick a name.
What's
the first one that shows up?
The first one that shows up is Frank Schwindel. Okay, so I'll pick that one.
Okay.
And now that name is red.
Which means it's incorrect. So now you're...
We may be sometime.
Yay, I picked a name.
Good job, Dan.
Yeah, go me.
Can you read, Jeff, in the Immaculate Grid, read the label for the right-hand third column?
The right-hand third column, 20-plus win season pitching.
That make any sense to you?
Nope.
Okay.
But
so we've confirmed I will never pick a sports-related cool thing again.
No, it's okay to pick that because it's still a cool thing.
Yeah,
there's a lot of entertainment value
that I can take advantage of.
Yeah, it's super arcane. Only baseball fans would understand the headers. It's kind of.
But it's really entertaining when Jeff is trying to figure out what it means.
Yeah, see, so it's still entertaining. I'm guessing it means that a pitcher was part of a team that won more than 20 games.
Isn't the pitcher something that drinks come in?
Yes. Margaritas typically.
It's if you finish 20 pitchers in one night at a bar, that's a win.
Oh, wow.
That's a win.
Okay.
For the bar. It's a win for the bar, the bar, I think.
Yeah, and probably for the emergency room.
Yes.
That's right.
Yep. Yep. All right. Cool. Oh, now it says I have 8 guesses.
You can play this 8 more times, Jeff, for a much more fun.
All right. We're going to pick one more. So we'll type in Frank again. And I'm going to scroll down a little bit. And now we're picking Frank Bowerman. And it's Frank red. Bowerman. Stupid game. No, it's a cool pick. It's a cool pick. And Ben at this point is probably just laughing. Anyhow.
I should have saved it for when Ben was on the show. That's
funny. No.
No.
It's, this way.
Yeah. All right, Patrice, tell us about your cool thing.
So my cool thing is probably something for Tom. Since his previous employers.
This is a great pick.
Book,
it's a
book titled Chip War, The Fight for the World's Most Critical Technology by Chris Miller. And it is about chips, like microchips, microchip technology, like how that whole thing evolved, like who invented what, and just how the whole industry kind of grew up, and then how things moved to, well, Taiwan mostly, but China is involved. And it's not just about the technology, but a lot of also geopolitical things that are happening and things that keep shifting, where it's like, oh no, we should integrate everybody and there should be free trade with everybody, and then we realize that doesn't work. And then we try a different approach. And it's a really, really interesting book. I learned a lot about how the technology is distributed, like who is really, like where the critical things are. like a couple of companies in the US especially, but also like a company in the Netherlands, for example, or I think it was the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And for sure the fabs in Taiwan, mostly a couple in Japan, very few in the US. And
very
it's,
few.
It's just there's yeah, I mean there's like there was a little part in there where it got a little bit too boring for me and I had to really concentrate on it because it got very technical. But yeah, that was it. Like once you made it through it, it was really interesting. And so I learned a lot about like all how this whole thing works together. And yeah.
I think that's a great pick, Patrice. I read this book about 2-3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I've heard Chris Miller on a few podcasts. And if people ask me, what should I read to understand the basics about chips and semiconductors to understand all this chatter about it? This would be the mm-hmm. one. I've read you know, 20 books on the history of semiconductors in the last 30 years. This is the best
You've
one
been
I've
part
ever
of
read.
The history of semiconductors to some extent. So
yeah. So, you know, I like to read books about Noyce and Gordon Moore and stuff. And there's some pretty good other books. Mm-hmm. But this guy did just such an amazing job. He had no background in this. I think it was four mm-hmm. or 5 years ago. He started reading up and doing his research. And mm-hmm. the way he explains stuff, it doesn't go that deep technically most of the time. It can get arcane.
Which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing. He explains it really, really well. Mm-hmm. And I agree, there are some spots where your eyes might roll into the back of your head a little bit. Yeah. Gets a little bit into the weeds. Yeah.
But it's not very long. Like that was not the thing. It wasn't very long. Like the most, like 99% of the book was really, really good and good storytelling and really well explained. I understood it. And then there is like, this 1% where most of
the I think the way you say that, he's a good storyteller. Mm-hmm. He clearly learned enough to create a good story that makes mm-hmm. sense and is easy to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also made me appreciate some things about, let's say, US politics circa like 2016 to 2020 that mm-hmm. I had not appreciated before, like the whole trade war with China and so on. I mean there's the obvious thing, and like I think that the former guy didn't really know what he was doing, but there were clearly in the background some people who really knew what they were doing.
The Department of Commerce has people that know this and this stuff inside and out. I think, you know, a lot of people want to be provocative and say semiconductors are the new nuclear weapons, you know, in the Cold War, the new version of Cold War. There's some truth. It's a little bit of hyperbole, but mm-hmm. it's a pretty important technology. It's maybe more like oil, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of you know, Japan and World War II and that whole story. I think there are a lot of aspects about it you have to be careful about.
And the cool thing is it is a really recent book. So there's a lot of, like, I mean, it's, I think it was only released a couple of months ago. I think, if I remember
it's
correctly,
from October 2022.
Okay. Yeah, it's very
so, new. So, like the Ukraine war, for example, is in it. And he actually references it, and he like he explained a couple of things. It's like, okay, why is Russia using so few like really guided missiles, and why are they struggling with their drones and so on? They don't have any chips, exactly, because they do not have any capacity, and for sure, like immediately they got cut off from everything.
Well, and he talks a lot about the history of semiconductor development in Russia, and it's just a complete dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And I learned a little bit about Russia from this. I'd never read anywhere before. Mm-hmm. And it was always interesting to me. We had customers that were in that city, I forget the name, that he talked about that they set up for semiconductor. And I'd be looking through our orders and stuff, and an order would come in from company XXY that was in this city. I'm like, what the heck is this?
What was it? Selenograd or something like that?
It's with a Z. I can't remember.
Yeah. I think it was some way, it resembles a silicon somehow. Like, I think it was Selenograd or something similar to that, at least.
And basically, the Russians just tried to do espionage and copy stuff, and they didn't ever really want to learn how to do it, whereas the Chinese kind of did both. They maybe stole stuff or learned stuff from other people, but they wanted to develop it themselves.
Yeah. There's also a little side story about, like, patents. Mm-hmm. In it, like towards the end, where it's like, okay, basically, like someone stole some stuff, and then they immediately filed like in China patents on it, and then like I think it was Micron, I think they tried to sue in China, And you, the courts basically said, nope, and you're violating their patents now, and so you can't sell in China.
Yeah, that whole Tsinghua thing was a huge scandal, right? The big guy basically stole it. Ex-UMC guy stole it, moved from Taiwan to China, started the company. You're like, yeah, whatever. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like the court said, no, it's fine. Like you own the patents now, and like the others are in violation. They were there before. Like
the company involved was Micron, the company I was talking about with the DDR interface.
Yeah, it's like, so there's plenty of really fun stories in that one.
I like your pick.
Good.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chuck, for like bringing this to my attention.
Oh, that's why I recognize the name. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it was Chuck.
It was one of Chuck's picks somewhere on the along the way. Yep. Okay. All right, Ian. Speaking of the Mac show, tell us about your pick.
Kind of a twofer in a way.
You have an invisible phone.
I bought a new phone. I've got a new phone. I upgraded my old 12 to a 14. I got a 14 plus. Really pleased with it. Suits me. Does exactly what I need it to. And I bought a nice shiny case. I've got a red one. I'm wearing a nice red one. So, and I got a nice shiny case. Mm-hmm. But what is it? Is it's as slippery as a bar of soap. So how do I fix that problem with pick number two? Skateboard tape.
Grip tape. Makes sense.
So you can buy these little packs. I'm sure you can get them in the States as well. And they're just a little pack of series of, now see if I can get this in camera somehow. And so I put them down the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So that where my hand sits.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
It's almost like sticky sandpaper.
Yeah, basically that's exactly what it's like, sticky sandpaper. So it's not as harsh
the
fingers as sandpaper, but you've got that. And so basically when I'm holding it, I've got those little blobs of things to stop dropping it. Yeah. So they're useful for anything, devices that are not Apple. You can put it on the bottom of your laptop. They've got some nice squares. Mm-hmm. You can stick it on the bottom of a laptop.
That's a really good idea. You know, I have a case.
And the other thing.
I have a case that has kind of gridded stuff on the side.
Yeah.
It works okay, but I think those tabs might work better.
I bet you can go to like whatever Walmart and get that because, I mean, grip tape these days.
You can buy a roll of grip tape, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I just want it pre-cut bits that save me a bit of work to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other thing, I've got a little penknife that I keep in my pocket that's shiny silver outside. And that just falls out of my pocket all the time. So I put some on that. So the edges of my little pocket knife has that, and that just stops it slipping. It's really, really cool. I like it. I'm a really useful, handy little thing.
So Ian, now I imagine if I went into your house in your kitchen, you'd have that tape stuck on all the silverware glasses.
Tom, you were thinking about the same thing. I was thinking, okay, where is Ian gonna put it next?
So it's easier to hold.
Exactly. Put it on the hood of his car.
it was one of those things that's been around forever, and I just thought, okay, I was trying. How can I make this thing? I didn't want to buy another case. I like to see my nice new shiny red phone.
Put it on your wife, so it's easier to hold.
Put it on your wife.
She doesn't like this. This is way too big for her hands.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
So this is my thing, which is cool. It's the grip tape, not the phone. The phone's just like my old one, just bigger with a good camera. So yeah, I'm fine.
I guess that means it's my turn now.
It is.
And
so what Lego thing did you pick?
Yeah,
I did not this pick the Lego thing this week because I have been so busy the last couple of weeks. I think I'm actually behind on some of the release announcements, but. My pick is something that's been incredibly useful for me over the past couple of weeks while I've had to work from alternate locations and work at my desk without having my display in place. And it's a portable monitor from KYY. Mm-hmm. So it's a 15.6 inch 1080p display, connects via USB-C. Oh, and and this thing works really well. Now, I would never, ever use it for image editing because because I can't get that level of color accuracy with this. But as a secondary display where I'm putting things like email and chats and stuff like that, it's really nice because, well, actually.
You basically double your laptop display real estate, right?
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, here's
like
the thing.
Like a big tablet.
Right. Basically.
Yeah. And so it comes with, sorry. So it comes with this cover that you can fold out of the way. And the cover also becomes a stand for it.
Like the old iPads stand.
Like the old iPads, kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so on the end, you have the two USB-C ports. And it also has a power port because there are certain situations where you would have to have external power for this. Mm. And I think it depends, I believe, on the ports on your computer.
Yeah, or if you don't want to drain the battery off your computer as fast.
Right, because it's using that USB for both the display bits and sucking power from your laptop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So for me, I just plug in the USB-C cable from between here and the laptop, and it's fine. So I'm just doing a one cable thing.
Nice.
And
it
doesn't weigh too much. Like carrying this and my laptop in my bag, it's not as much weight as carrying my MacBook Pro and my iPad Pro, because I have used my iPad Pro as a secondary display a lot. They are $129 regularly. They've been doing a special. Oh, it looks like it just ended. You could get it for $100, but apparently that special deal is over now. Oh, well, anyhow, so $129 for this.
Yeah, and when you look at that one and you do what I usually do and change the .com to .co.uk for looking at a UK version of that, it's 220. It's double the price.
Well, that, you might be looking. Well, let me look at your link.
Wow.
So I have just found another third part. I've found another thing which is exactly the same device with a different alphabet manufacturer slapped on the top front of it, because they'll all be made in the same factory. And that one you can get for £100. They've got £60 off on that one. That was just me searching quickly for another one of a similar type.
The one that you found that was 200 and whatever dollars.
If I changed your link, literally take your link and take .com and change it to .co.uk, it comes up with £225 to buy it in the UK.
Right.
And it's not the the 4K version when you
it's the exact same device for
exact same device.
Okay.
It shows you how bad the pound
is. Don't buy it in the
4K version.
No, don't buy that one. Look, again, chat room. You know about the chat room? Go and have a look in there at the link I posted, because there's one for the UK and EU, which is same, which looks to be pretty much the same device, just with some, as I said, it's another
thing looks,
made by an alphabet manufacturer in China. And you'll get that one for a whole £99.
Which is about close to the one that Jeff...
It'd be about £100.
How's the build quality feel, Jeff? The connectors seem reasonable.
They do. For the price point, I was thinking, if this lasts long enough to get me through my move, then I've gotten my money's worth out of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I go to Mac Stock next month, I'll probably throw this in my bag with my laptop.
I think this would be great for travel. I hate when I'm traveling and I just have a laptop, no matter what size, even a 15-inch screen is too small for me. Mm-hmm. And so now I have a 14-inch screen on my laptop. I could throw this in a bag, and I'm sure it doesn't weigh very much or take up too much real estate. When I get set up in a hotel or something, now I got decent display real estate, you know.
Yeah, no, like you were saying. It's a tempting idea.
Yeah, it's nice. And I'm looking around at on the US Amazon site, and there are tons of these. Like Ian, the one that you found in the UK.
Yeah.
In the US, that same one is $99 or $95.99.
I mean, it looks to be almost identical device. I think there's even the same pictures. The only difference is it's got a different name on the front.
Yeah.
It's an inexpensive
for all we know, it's the same thing with a different label, like literally.
Right.
Yep. All right. So maybe we have all found ways to spend each other's money today. Except for Tom.
Yeah, who, mine's free. Even though you won't like it, it's free.
but for that target audience, it will be awesome.
Yep, for those two guys, it's great.
Yep. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me here on The Big Show every week and also on Fridays on The Mac Show if you're into the Apple side of things. There's still a bunch of WWDC stuff to talk about, so we're not done yet. There's just so much. You can find out everything I'm doing, all the social media links, the podcast, the project, literally everything on my website, thepatrice.com. And if you want to like hear about cool food stories and food memories and just everything that goes with that, head over to my podcast, Foodie Flashback, at foodieflashback.com, where I interview really cool people about that.
Awesome. All right. And Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Ian Grant. You'll find me there. Look for me under Veeam. That'll be me. That's the usually easiest place. And I'll be here every Thursday on The Big Show. And you can usually find me in the Slack room sometimes if you shout. I'll be there.
Awesome. And Tom, how about you? Where can people find you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am Tom F at sfba.social. And in the BTN Slack is another good place.
Awesome. And then for me on the social medias, I'm Jay Gamut pretty much everywhere. I'm most active on Mastodon and Instagram. And then for shows on Tuesdays, I'm typically on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Then here on Thursdays for The Big Show, and then most Thursday evenings on Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS. Then back here again on Friday, for me, Friday mornings, for The Mac Show. And then Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine. And then sometimes other shows along the way, too. With that, we are done. Thank you to all of you for just being so awesome and making this a wonderfully fun big show for me. This is the first big show where I've actually had like kind of a setup in here. The Mac Show last week, I was here, but it was my laptop on a stack of books. So I'm feeling like I'm getting settled in now. Nice. But seriously, thank you. You are all awesome, and I'm so glad I get to spend part of my day with you. All of you that are watching, listening live, participating in the chat, all of you, you rock, and I'm so glad that you are part of this as well. Everyone that watches or listens later, thank you for being part of the BTN family too. Thank you, TSO host, for being here and supporting us every single week. Ewan, thank you just for being you. Muller, keep feeling better, and thank you for making sure that we have people for shows. Let's see. That's like the important stuff. Oh, I haven't mentioned the daily news show for a while. Check that out. I feel like I've been remiss not mentioning that. Kyle does an amazing job, so please go check that out. And then join us again next Thursday for the big show. And next Friday for the Mac Show, maybe. It's a holiday week in the US. So, you know, we might have to, we might have some show scheduling changes because, you know, it's a British Tech Network. So why not let US holidays change?
Wait a second. Schedules. We're on the American Tech Network.
Right.
I think we should have a show on the what the Brits might call the American Rebellion Day. Might be appropriate.
Yeah. The inconsiderate git day. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the one. Traitor Day.
Traitor Day. Yeah.
Traitor Day.
Winker
That's what it is. It's the day you were traitors.
It's well, traitors to the crown. Yes. Yes, it is. After all the king did for us. And look how we repaid that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, yes, next week is Independence Day in the United States, Treason Day, Treason Remembrance Day, I suppose, in the UK. And but I'm glad that we can all still be friends.
We can.
So, all right. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you next week.